Timeline of the Russian Revolution, Part 2, by the Marxists Internet Archive, August 1917. Since March, 568 enterprises, laying off more than 104,000 workers, have closed down. Prices on average have risen by 248% compared to 1913 prices, though urban centers are hit hardest. In Moscow, prices inflated by 836%. Meanwhile, real wages fell by 57.4% since 1913. Bread rations are severe. In Moscow, the ration allows 2 pounds of bread per person for an entire week. In this month, there are 440 cases where peasants and soldiers seize the land of big land estate holders. The provisional government can barely keep up with the amount of work required to suppress the countless uprisings. August 3rd. The Sixth Congress of the Bolsheviks comes to an end, representing 240,000 party members. Since Lenin is in hiding, Stalin delivers the report on the work of the Central Committee, and he is also re-elected to the Central Committee of the Bolsheviks. The Congress resolves that a peaceful revolution has become impossible. Further, the party decides on the principle of democratic centralism. August 12th through the 15th. The Provisional Government holds a state conference in Moscow. Workers overwhelmingly vote for a general strike in opposition to the conference, but the Petrograd Soviet votes 364 to 304 to not strike. The workers partly accept this and instead strike for a single day, with 400,000 workers walking out. As a result of the backwardness of the Petrograd Soviet, a vote is taken to hold new elections and receives support in the form of 175 votes to 4. August 14th. The division in the state conference becomes palpable when General Kornilov arrives. Kerensky patriotically asserts his authority, to which Milukov explains, in reality, he invokes only a feeling of pity. Kornilov speaks with heavy defeatism, with attentive allied diplomats in the audience, and explains that the Germans can easily win Riga, and if he is not allowed a full military dictatorship, Petrograd is sure to fall. Rhetoric vehemently crosses the aisles. Threats abound. Open fighting nearly breaks out. The government is starkly divided between social democracy and military dictatorship. Amazingly, world-renowned anarchist Peter Kropotkin shows his support for the defense of Russia through a dictatorship, explaining that we need a federation such as they have in the United States. August 18th. The Petrograd Soviet, despite the objection of Menshevik President Chesty, holds a vote on the abolition of the death penalty. The vote resolves 904 to abolish the death penalty. Only the top leaders of the Menshevik Party, Tsetsereli, Chesty, Dan, and Leiber, vote against. On the 22nd, the provisional government agrees to abide by the Soviet decision, fearful of retribution otherwise. August 19th. Kornilov demands that Kerensky allow him to reassign his army to Petrograd. Kerensky refuses. August 21st. The Germans, just as Kornilov promised, occupy Riga. No defense of Riga is attempted by the Russian army, who simply retreats, allowing the Germans to occupy this nest of Bolshevism. According to reporter John Reed, many of the officers and bourgeoisie prefer a defeat to Germany rather than face the prospect of soldiers' committees and Bolshevism. Kerensky, seeing his position is weak, makes trips to the front, where he vaguely promises several generals that sometime soon he will create a directory which will assume military control. Meanwhile, Kornilov summons 4,000 of his most loyal officers, 4 from each regiment, and shares his vision to hang every last Bolshevik and Soviet member. Kornilov had agreed with Kerensky's plan of a military dictatorship, with just one exception. Leave out Kerensky. August 22nd. Kerensky, thinking he has reached agreement for dictatorship, now asks Kornilov to send a cavalry corps to Petrograd in order to introduce martial law. Kornilov pauses. August 25th. Kerensky is notified that he will receive the cavalry corps from Kornilov, as requested. Kerensky sighs relief as his secret military seizure of power is ready for the overthrowing of the provisional government and the Soviets. Even Kerensky's own party is unaware of the deal he has struck. As if playing chess, Kornilov tells Kerensky that surely Petrograd is too dangerous for him. Kornilov would be happy, however, to put Kerensky under his personal protection. Kerensky begins to waver. August 26th. Kerensky momentarily discards his dictatorship ambitions and begins to plot against Kornilov. The cadets withdraw from the provisional government, waiting to see which side will prevail. In a move to shore up support from the bourgeoisie, the provisional government meets with the largest Russian landlords and agrees to double the price of grain, despite enormous protest from the executive committee of the Soviet. Meanwhile, the Bolshevik press continues to tell the masses that it is not calling for an insurrection and tries to dispel government-placed rumors to the contrary. August 26th. Kerensky telegrams Kornilov, "Relieve your command and come to Petrograd." Kornilov publicly announces, "The provisional government is composed of German spies. It is a hostage to the Bolsheviks and the Soviets. It is responsible for the loss of Riga." Kornilov sends 3 cavalry divisions to capture Petrograd. Kerensky feebly orders them to halt and declares Kornilov a traitor. Meanwhile, the Bolsheviks begin organizing the arming of the Petrograd workers for self-defense. August 28th. Kerensky vacillates and demands the press retract his comments on Kornilov's treachery. The newspapers, however, have already printed. Stock prices soar on reading of the morning news, and the bourgeoisie are sure Kornilov will win. The English military mission comes out in support of Kornilov. When part of Kornilov's army arrives in the Petrograd train station, the workers delay letting the trains through. Some soldiers are mistakenly sent in the wrong direction. The workers fraternize with the Cossacks. Their commander, Krymov, stricken with fear of Bolshevik propaganda, orders his soldiers out of Petrograd to a small village several kilometers away. Agitators immediately spring up in the village, and the Cossacks begin to hold Soviet-like meetings of their own. Kornilov's so-called Savage Division meets a similar fate, and after thorough communist agitation within their ranks, they hoist a red flag and arrest their staff commander. August 29th. Nearly every district in Petrograd has organized Red Guards, now totaling 40,000 armed workers, with thousands of support personnel. Rail workers tear up tracks to prevent Kornilov's advance. Postal and telegraph workers practice a slowdown and hold military communications, sending pertinent copies to the Bolsheviks. Days shorter than 16 hours are rare for the Red Workers. Bolshevik soldiers begin to arrive from Kronstadt and Vyborg. Meanwhile, the garrisons in Kronstadt and Vyborg mutiny and shoot any officers who declare allegiance to Kornilov. August 30th. The Soviet announces that Kornilov has been defeated and his army completely demoralized. September 1. A wave of support floods the Soviet Central Executive Committee from the Urals, the Donbass, the Central Industrial Region, the Ukraine, Belarus, Central Asia, and so on. 126 local Soviets demand the Petrograd Soviet take power. The Petrograd Soviet adopts a resolution to support the Bolshevik Party. The Mensheviks and socialist revolutionaries try to filibuster, but the resulting vote is still devastating, 279 to 115. This brings Bolshevik support to four major cities, Petrograd, Ivano-Voznesensk, Kronstadt, and Krasnoyarsk. The number of land seizures by the peasants increases to 958 incidents. Meanwhile, Kerensky openly declares Russia a republic and arrests General Kornilov. September 2nd, a joint session of all Soviets in Finland, which is still a territory of Russia, vote on a Soviet government, 700-13. The Bolshevik Party position on the right of nationalities to secede from Russia is well known, and in less than 2 months, Finland would gain its independence. September 4th. Trotsky and other Bolshevik leaders are released from prison after massive public pressure. Kerensky attempts to disband the Military Revolutionary Committee, but it refuses. September 5th. The Moscow Soviet announces its support for Soviet government in 355 to 254 votes. At a Congress of Soviets of Siberia, held in Krasnoyarsk, the Soviet renews its pledge of support for the Bolshevik Party. September 8th. Sailors of the Baltic Fleet, through their elected organs, declare that they will not recognize the authority of the provisional government, nor will they execute any of its orders. On the 11th, the Central Committee of the Black Sea Fleet demands all power to the Soviets. Meanwhile, the Kiev Soviet votes in favor of a Soviet government by 130 to 66 votes. September 9th. The Mensheviks and socialist revolutionaries desperately try to reassert their influence in the Soviets and convoke a new session with over 1,000 deputies to try to undo the September 1st decision. The Soviet again votes, now 519 to 414 votes with 67 abstentions in favor of a Soviet government. September 12th, Lenin illegally publishes Lessons of Revolution, recounting events since the February Revolution. Lenin also finishes his most important theoretical work, The State and Revolution. September 14th. Lenin finishes his work, The Impending Catastrophe and How to Combat It, where he presents a detailed outline of what the Bolsheviks will do to save the country from ruin. Lenin also sends a letter to the Central Committee in both Moscow and Petrograd, explaining The Bolsheviks must assume power. September 14th to the 22nd. The provisional government convokes a democratic conference with 1,200 delegates. Bolsheviks are in attendance, though the government aimed to arrest Lenin and Zinoviev, who did not attend. The conference votes against forming a new coalition government. The provisional government, unhappy with this decision, decides to form a representative provisional council within the conference to decide this issue, which in turn refuses a new coalition government. Determined to get a correct result, a pre-parliament is created, chosen mostly by the provisional government, and this group approves a new coalition government. The Bolsheviks agree to participate in the new pre-parliament despite the objections of Lenin, Trotsky, Stalin, and others. During this time, Lenin publishes an article on compromises, explaining the Bolsheviks will seek compromises with others so long as it does not betray their core principles. September 18th. Kerensky orders the dissolution of the Central Committee of the Baltic Fleet. The fleet refuses. In Tashkent, the Soviet overthrows the local government. Kerensky sends troops to take back the city and succeeds, with many arrests and the reintroduction from the time when peasants were serfs of public flogging. Workers from 40 Soviets immediately call a general strike in response, lasting for a week. September 23rd. The Bolshevik Central Committee approves a list of candidates for the Constituent Assembly, which includes Lenin and Stalin. September 25th. The third and last meeting of the coalition government occurs, amid staunch protests from the elected Soviets. Trotsky is elected as chairman of the Petrograd Soviet. October. Trade union membership amounts to nearly 2 million workers throughout Russia. In 1917, the total population of the country is 145 million. No hard occupational data exists for 1917. But by December 1926, after a huge growth in the working class, the total number of workers in the USSR only amounted to 7.93 million workers, making up around 5% of the total population of the country. In 1917, the number of workers was considerably less than this. Fraternization of Russian and German soldiers increases dramatically. And throughout the front, mass mutinies occur in favor of elected officers. October 5th. With Trotsky, Stalin, and other Bolshevik leaders present, the party votes again on their earlier decision to join the pre-parliament. This time, only one vote, Kamenev, supports joining the government. October 6th. The Petrograd Soldiers' Soviet declares that it no longer reports to the provisional government. October 7th. The pre-parliament begins its first session. When the Bolshevik time slot arrives, Trotsky delivers a scathing speech and drops a bombshell. The Bolsheviks will not participate. For the next 11 days, the pre-parliament tries to create some unity among its remaining members, but on their first and most urgent question, what to do about the war, it fails to find a majority position. Mass confusion and despair begin to set in as delegates confront their profound ineptitude. Meanwhile, headquarters plans to launch a new offensive before the 20th, which many generals who support the government think is, quote, completely crazy. October 10th. The Bolshevik Central Committee debates and approves the decision to overthrow the provisional government and to follow the tactics suggested by Lenin, who illegally arrived in Petrograd 3 days earlier. Kamenev and Zinoviev strongly disagree with the majority decision to overthrow the government. Meanwhile, a Politburo is created. October 12th. The Petrograd Soviet creates its own military revolutionary committee, which will lead the insurrection. October 14th. Lenin responds to the challenge from the Mensheviks and socialist revolutionaries on the question, can the Bolsheviks retain state power? October 18th. The Bolsheviks Kamenev and Zinoviev announce the Bolshevik plan for revolution in a Menshevik newspaper. Lenin demands that both be expelled from the party, despite his close relations with them. Kamenev and Zinoviev defend their position before the party, explaining they are simply expressing a difference of opinion. Lenin responds that public dissent is certainly acceptable, but not after a decision of such a serious nature and magnitude, similar to that of a strike, is democratically made by the party. While they both would be expelled, they were very soon after forgiven. Stalin would later interpret these events and how they should be handled much differently. October 19th. Kerensky demands the General Secretary of Ukraine to immediately come to Petrograd, likely to be arrested. The district attorney is meanwhile ordered to investigate the Rada for criminal activity. Meanwhile, Kerensky also threatens the arrest of the elected officers of the Baltic Fleet if they continue to refuse to deliver freight. The regional committee threatens Kerensky to carry out his threat. Meanwhile, the All-Russian Conference of Factory and Shop Committees resolve to support all power to the Soviets. October 20th. The recently appointed Minister of War, Vorovsky, makes an impromptu conference before the pre-parliament and demands that Russia immediately make peace or face complete catastrophe. He is completely ridiculed and sent on a leave of absence. October 23rd. For several weeks, the Bolsheviks have been carrying on extensive campaigns of agitation throughout the country. Though missing great speakers in Lenin, Zinoviev, and Kamenev, Trotsky and Sverdlov work tirelessly. Most importantly, however, are the thousands upon thousands of ordinary workers, soldiers, peasants, and sailors who convince their fellow workers that the time has come to seize power in their own hands. The Soviets issue Revolutionary Decree No. 1. Hiring and firing of workers is controlled by the Soviet. October 24th. The provisional government attempts to close the current underground Bolshevik newspaper, which since July had moved offices and changed names several times. At the same time, an offensive is launched against Smolny, the headquarters of the Bolshevik Central Committee and the Revolutionary Military Committee. The October Revolution begins. By nightfall, Trotsky has led the Red Guards and the Soviet workers to control all the bridges that cross the Neva and key positions throughout the city, including all roads into the city. Lenin arrives at Smolny and takes command of the Red Guards and Workers' Soviets. By morning, the Red Guards have seized the General Post Office and several train stations, all power stations, the State Bank, the Central Telephone Exchange, and main government buildings. The Winter Palace, General Staff Headquarters, the Marinsky Palace, and a few other points still remain in the hands of the Provisional Government. At 10 a.m. on October 25th, the Revolutionary Military Committee publishes to the citizens of Russia, announcing their victory. In Moscow, revolutionary forces encounter stiff opposition. The battles are fierce with casualties on both sides. At 10:40 in the evening, the Second All-Russian Congress of Soviets opens in Smolny, and the Mensheviks and socialist revolutionaries who were invited walk out. Kerensky flees to the north in order to start a counter-revolutionary rebellion. In retrospect, of the 26 current members of the Bolshevik Central Committee at the time of the revolution, 12 would be executed in the purges of the 1930s. October 26th. At 2 a.m., the Winter Palace is captured, thus bringing victory for the revolution in Petrograd without a single life lost by either side. The Congress of Soviets resolves at 3 a.m. to workers, soldiers, and peasants. Further, the decree on land and peace is issued, in addition to the formation of a new government. October 27th. Under the leadership of General Krasnov and Kerensky, units of the 3rd Cavalry Corps drive towards Petrograd. During the day and the morrow, they seize the cities of Gatchina and Zarke Selo and capture the Pulkov Hills. By the end of the night, Soviet power is successfully established in Minsk, Kronstadt, Ivano-Vosnesk, Lugansk, Kazan, Rostov-on-Don, Revel, Samara, and Saratov. October 29th. Junkers launch an insurrectionary attempt within Petrograd, but are quickly defeated by the Red Guard on the same day. Meanwhile, the Executive Committee of Railwaymen demand a united socialist government composed of Mensheviks, socialist revolutionaries, and Bolsheviks. Until this occurs, they refuse to transport food. The rank and file do not fully agree, and food nonetheless trickles into the cities. Lenin insists that nothing should be done. The rail workers themselves will resolve the issue. And in January, the workers did, by electing a new central committee. October 31st. The Soviet Revolution wins in Baku, now holding a total of 17 provincial capitals. Meanwhile, Red Guards confront General Krasnov's troops head-on, and after taking back the Pulkov Hills outside of Petrograd, the opposition dissolves. November 1st. The Soviet Revolution gains control in Tashkent. In the north, General Krasnov is taken prisoner, but Kerensky again escapes. November 2nd. The Soviet government proclaims Declaration of Rights of the Peoples of Russia, permitting the nationalities of Russia to break away and have full independence. Meanwhile, Mikhail Frunze leads the Red Guards of Petrograd, sailors of the Baltic Fleet, and Red Guard detachments from Ivanovo-Vosnesk to reinforce the Moscow workers. This breaks the back of the counter-revolutionary forces. November 3rd. The Kremlin in Moscow is secured, ending the battle for Moscow. Meanwhile, amidst strife inside the Bolshevik Party, where a minority refuses to cooperate in the new government, Lenin issues an ultimatum. Either split and create a new party or adhere to the principles of democratic centralism. Kamenev, Zinoviev, Rykov, Nongin, and others, citing the railway workers' issue among others, decide to leave the party. Sverdlov is elected chairman of the All-Russian Central Executive Committee to replace Kamenev. November 5th. Lenin proclaims the victory of the revolution, assuring people, "Remember that now you yourselves are at the helm of the state. No one will help you if you yourselves do not unite and take into your hands all affairs of the state. Your Soviets are from now on the organs of state authority. They are legislative bodies with full powers." November 9th. Commander-in-Chief Dukhanin is relieved from his post following his refusal to seek an immediate armistice. Ensign Krylenko is appointed Commander-in-Chief in his place. General Dukhanin responds by organizing loyal soldiers to attack the Soviet government. November 18th. A Soviet government is established in Vladivostok. November 20th. The Ukrainian Rada declares itself an independent nation. Meanwhile, General Dukhanin is defeated by the Red Guards at Mogilev. November 21st. The Soviet government publishes a decree allowing citizens to recall politicians from office. November 23rd. The Soviet government publishes a decree limiting the salaries of high-paid officials. November 28th. The Soviet government presently controls 28 provincial capitals, in addition to every major industrial city of the country. The government orders the arrest of the leadership of the Cadet Party.
December 3rd. The CPC recognized the right of the Ukraine to secede unconditionally and without reservations. The Ukrainian Rada, however, refuses to allow Ukrainian Soviets to meet and hold a congress. The CPC informs the Rada that it either allowed democracy or consider itself at war with Russia. December 7th. The Cheka is created to combat counter-revolution and sabotage. The first charter of this organ is to track the economic activity of wealthy people. December 14th. Nationalization of the banks is proclaimed. December 15th. The Soviet government offers its first armistice to the Central Powers in an attempt to end the war, and the Army Congress on the demobilization of the army begins. December 19th. Finland announces its independence from Russia. Meanwhile, the CPC accepts an offer of negotiation from the Ukrainian Rada. The negotiations soon fail. December 25th. The first All-Ukraine Congress of Soviets declares Ukraine a Soviet Socialist Republic still independent from Russia and disavows the Rada. The Ukrainian Soviets, along with the Russian Red Guards, would successfully defeat the Rada on January 26, 1918. December 31st. The Soviet CPC accepts Finnish independence, even though the Finnish government is completely bourgeois. Thus concludes the timeline of the Russian Revolution for 1917 by the Marxists Internet Archive. Read by Brian Bastian. For errors or omissions, please contact bbastian@marxists.org. The sources for this timeline were The History of the Russian Revolution by Leon Trotsky, various sources throughout the Lenin Internet Archive, The Great Soviet Encyclopedia, the book An Illustrated History of the Great October Socialist Revolution, and two Russian websites, the first of which A Chronology of 1917, the second A Chronology of the First World War, published on the Marxist Internet Archive originally in 2005. This audio recording was made in June of 2006. As with all material produced by the Marxist Internet Archive, this is copyleft, all rights reversed, license under the Creative Commons, attribution and share alike.